resources worldwide for you, your farm, and the planet.
So, welcome to the Living Farms podcast. I'm very happy to have Uli Hoter here today with us. He's the co-leader of the section for agriculture at the Goetheanum, so a colleague of mine since 2010. And today we would like to discuss about the approaching 100 years of biodynamic agriculture, because next year we will have the agriculture conference on the theme Evolving Agriculture, 100 Years of Biodynamics, Looking Back to Look Forward. So we will have a little bit insight of how biodynamic agriculture developed and what happened in between. So thanks for joining in, Uli.
Yes, you're welcome. Thanks for inviting me, and I'm looking forward.
So let's just jump directly into the topic. So biodynamic farming developed in 1924, I would say, with the agriculture course. Could you give us a little bit of an insight what kind of context it was and why biodynamic farming developed in this time?
Well, when I take the historical context, we are in the years after the First World War. And this has been a very disturbing time, I would say, because World War I has not only been a war on the battlefields, it has really been a kind of very profound crisis for the European civilization and culture. And on a political level, we see that the empires which has been in place in 1914, they have all been splitted off at the end of the World War, and it means that people, they lived in a complete other social reality. The most profound change has been in Russia by change of the Tsar empire to the new what has became then the Soviet Republic. But it has been the same in Germany, in Austria, and I would say all over. And it has been the same for the economical context, because as the Germans, they lost the war, they had to pay a lot, and they lost their main regions of industrial production, but also of agricultural production. So when in June 1924 they gathered in Silesia on this, estate of agricultural production, they had been completely in between what has been the traditional past and what has been the coming modern time in agriculture, but didn't really arrive yet. So it was really an in-between. The traditional agricultural way to do has been gone and has been like swept away by the war. They lost in Germany a third of their agricultural production. And in the same time, the modern way to do agriculture has been on the door, but not really achieved. And there has been a kind of fear of this new way to do agriculture. A longing for, but a fear in the same time. So it has really been a kind of economical, societal, cultural in-between situation, and I would say this has been the context in which the agricultural course has been asked for by these farmers or agricultural people, and in then Rudolf Steiner said, yes, I will come and I will give this course, and this has been the condition he had to speak in.
And that's kind of interesting because I feel that we are currently in a similar situation, or that that the former way of agriculture is not really working anymore and it's kind of fading out. At least that's what I'm hoping a little bit with the agrochemicals. But still, there's a lot of fear going on in moving into a other form of agriculture. So I think that's...
Yes, I would say also there is something similar between the situation 100 years ago and now. What is changed is that we have had actually in our regions here in Europe, in America, but even in the ancient socialist states and in some regions even of India and China and so on, the industrial way to farm has been developed, and now it comes to an end. And there are two ways to go. The one is to go for ecological, organic, biodynamic way. Yeah. And the other way is then to go in a new step of industrial way to farm. This means smart farming. This means CRISPR-Cas techniques for the breeding of the plants. This means, yeah, a new step into a technical approach. It means vertical farming and all this, yeah. And then the other side, it would mean to go for an ecological path. And I would say each farm, each country, each association is actually and will be in the next 10 years confronted with the question, which of the two paths will I take?
Not an easy task to,
yeah.
to deal with in our future. But and during this development, I mean, we look at a, let's say, agriculture concept that was developed in Europe, but it has been spread quite widely into the world. And I don't know, we checked it recently. How many countries are currently doing biodynamic farming? I think 150 or 60 countries?
No, it's not so much. I would say we are present in all climates. This is already a huge achievement. We have really actually the banana production in the full tropical situation, and it works. And I'm just coming back from Norway, where you have 4 or 5 months of summertime and it works the same, yeah? And we are present in all, I would say, cultural spaces of our world. Not only here in the Western Christian-based civilization, but also in India, based on Hinduism, and in the Muslimic-based countries and in the Buddhistic-based countries. So it really, made it possible, all together, to adapt it to different climates and I would say different cultural backgrounds or mindsets, as one says today. And yeah, the countries, I would say there are not so many where we are in, but you know, it's a kind of when you have one initiative group or person in one country, all of a sudden there is a kind of crowding around, yeah? So actually we lived this in Costa Rica for the banana production. We lived it several years back in India due to an influential person and so on. So it needs each time a kind of, yeah, let's say, fire, which is mostly carried by a person or a constellation of person, and then there is something developing.
And how would you say from the contents of biodynamics, how it developed over this nearly 100 years? Because, I mean, it's a special thing that that the agriculture course is just one book, so to say, or it's one one input compared to other anthroposophical disciplines. There are several books or several, or much more lectures, so to say. So how do you think the biodynamic movement developed also in the contents throughout the last years or centuries?
Yeah, I have a certain view on this, but I'm not so very sure in which degree it fits to the very real situation. But I think in the first decades, it has been the whole, what then also became the organic movement, has been mainly about soil fertility. This has been the main driver, the main question, and all has been done in the perspective to raise the soil fertility. It was not so much an overall ecological approach as we have nowadays. It was more based soil. And for example, what we have actually, the more complete and diverse approach of ecological issues and perspectives and so on, this has come later on. And after this first, I would say, period, where it has been based, then it has been completed in a second period, which I see mostly after Second World War, with the question how to bring the products to the people. So the development of Demeter and of concepts about quality of food, and to establish what we have actually as the food sector, the organic food sector, nothing existed. Yeah, it has really built up from scratch. And this has been mainly done or started at least by biodynamic people together with, this, let's say, sister impulse about associative economics. Yeah, most of the wholesalers, most of the first shopkeepers has been inspired by this. So there I see a second phase. And then we have had a third phase where, and I'm already a little bit of this, where end of the 70s and in the 80s, many of young people from the cities, they came to the very few farms, biodynamic farms, but they opened their door and we became a generation of, let's say, city people going to farms and doing things which are on an agricultural level not so high, that we have had a kind of inspiration also to change the social structures on the farm. So to have community-based farms, to have farms which are the ownership situation is not with the family and so on. Then this came up, It was a kind of breaking up of the traditional forms which agriculture has been in for centuries. And I would say the fourth generation or the fourth etape which we are in now are with the specialized cultures. So in the first line, viticulture, and then the tea people, the coffee people, also the now we are out of Europe, now the bananas. So the people, they are very dedicated and very knowing about one crop. And they are looking for quality. And now they come. This has been the case with the wine makers and the situation with the wine in the vineyards. And then what you can taste actually then in the glass. And this is, I would say, where we are actually in, that the searcher for higher quality with very specialized productions and being active in also specialized markets, they are the people who are coming actually towards us. So perhaps these four etapes or steps of evolving of biodynamics.
And you just mentioned the associate economy as one of the initial or important aspects. Could you elaborate a little bit on what this is? Because I still think it's quite a valid and applied concept also in the fourth phase of biodynamic development.
Okay, associative economy is a term which Steiner introduced to his view of how one could shape and organize and do, I would say, not business, but economical interactions. It's neither a communist or socialist approach, it's neither a purely capitalist approach. It's in this way perhaps in between, and it takes from the capitalist approach the independence of the entrepreneur. He is, let's say, the entrepreneur and has the full freedom, always in the context of the regulations which are in a certain region, but he is not bound or not hidden in his possibility to bring initiative to his enterprise by some, let's say, socialist regulations. And what is taken from the more socialist approach is that you are not only or not working for your personal profit. You have a new definition of profit, and this profit means that the needs of the people, they are covered. So it starts with the need of the people and not with the power of production. And also the need of the earth and the need of, let's say, all stakeholders. It starts with the need of the stakeholders, but to respond to these needs, the entrepreneur is a free man or woman, let's say. And so it combines the both. And in the food sector, where we have always the difficulty that there is not enough money on the farms, there is always a lack of money on the farms because they are seen from the consumer the farthest away. So the shopkeeper, the wholesaler, the baker or the cheese maker, they all take what they need, and what comes at the end to the farm is not enough for the farmer. But he has not the choice because he is the last one, and what he does then, he just works more and he works more, or he makes more industrialization of his farm. Yeah. And on the other hand, he has the products. He has the basic products, which at the end are in the plates of the people. Yeah. And this, what we call an added value chain, is then brought in an added value circle. So we create round tables and we are sitting all the actors around, each one independent, but each one can be seen from the other one, and it's transparent how the price is made or semi-present in each one of these things. And when you do this, at the end you realize that when, let's say an example, the farmer has only this price for the milk, in 2 or 3 years, he will no longer sit on the table because he stopped to produce milk because it's not a living for him. Yeah. So it's this kind of interaction between the actors and driven, let's say, by the needs of the stakeholders, which perhaps is a first approach to what it is, associative economy.
And it's, I think, such a valuable concept, and it, what always is fascinating for me in this ideas of Rudolf Steiner is that he was such a visionary, although the times were so different, but still his visions are so easily to be applied in our today's time. And what would you say are the people that developed this applications of the biodynamic concept? So are there important people for you where you think, okay, these people really shaped the last progressions of the biodynamic movement in the world? Or is it more a collective approach that biodynamics is spread further in the world? Or how do you see that?
I think it's an individual one, but each one who became the carrier of the biodynamic impulse is important. I think this is one of the really strengths we have in our movement, that we are based on individuals. And of course, there are individuals that have more, let's say, people around them, yeah? But we don't have leaders and followers. At least this is also a goal and an aim of our generation. For example, in the section, Jean-Michel Florin and myself, when we took over the responsibility for the section, we said, full stop with kind of leaders, in a way, of gurus, and what they say is right, and all the others go behind. So we are really actually a generation who says the sovereignty is with each one who farms, or who is a breeder, or who is involved in another way in the movement. And this has nicely been expressed by a book which has been launched 2 years ago, I think, in German. And it's about portraits of winemakers. And the title of the book is From the Freedom to Make the Right Wine. So the author, she discovered that people who adopted biodynamics for their vineyards, they are free. They do out of their personal, let's say, insights and the conditions, they rediscover with a very good approach of observation and so on. But they do not create at the end a fantastic wine, but the right wine out of these conditions and of their own inspiration. Okay, so I find this express this very nicely, that we try to be a movement of, let's say, sovereign individuals. And this makes it not always easy, but it makes it possible, because we are a movement, we are a worldwide movement, and we have good relations.
And how would you say, how do people join this movement? Because I feel that sometimes it's still difficult for people to get into the movement, so to say. Because it has quite a long tradition, and there, as you said, those individuals that have promoted the biodynamic movement, but still I find the movement very open at the same time. So sometimes it's a balance of how do you get to know it in more detail and not be, let's say, getting shy because you don't know yet all of these individual persons.
Yeah. But I think actually our doors are really open. And when you look, for example, to this situation with the people who are in the wine sector, luckily we achieved to be open, and they are other people than farmers. And they have another type of enterprise, and they are in another market, and they resonate in another way, and they are in countries like France, the majority actually, or in Spain or so on. So we are really open, and this is one example. Another example is since several years, actually, in the middle European countries, Demeter went out of to be only in the organic shops and went to the supermarkets. And we are there in, for example, in Switzerland, in Coop and Migros. And you have to know, we are training these people, yeah, who are really in the shops. Yeah, we are not only speaking with the top level of the management. And to do all this training with these people who have often, let's say, an immigration background. Yeah, when you are selling salads in a Coop, you are not a Swiss for I don't know, five generations. Yeah, you arrived in Swiss from Turkey or from Afghanistan or from one of these countries where we have our immigrations, and you speak with them about Demeter and biodynamics. So this is openness. And then, yeah, when you are a customer and you go in a Coop and Migros and you encounter, you have not to go in a specialized Demeter organic shop. Now it's on the shelf where you pass. Yeah. So actually, at least in the countries where the Demeter trademark is an important tool for the public awareness, I would say we achieved in the last years to be really open, and we have more the challenge to, yeah, to do this opening in a very good way and not just open and then it's gone. Yeah. And the other thing that we have had have been perhaps a little bit more closed and among us and so on, I would say this is gone the last 15 years. It's still present in some countries, but as I just tried to explain, actually, we took the courage to open, and we have also been asked if new people can enter. And I think it's a very lucky situation.
And I think also with the communications, it's getting more and more easy to access all of the information. And for example, there are so many translations already now existing for the agriculture course, which I think was not a standard some years ago. So like also we try to provide all of the information in the four different languages and so on. And of course, I would also add that to get in contact with the biodynamic movement, I also feel that the farms are very important, because I have always recognized when you visit the biodynamic farms, they are often so open to discuss this topic and to be like very open-hearted to just tell you, okay, these are the preparations and we do it this and that way because of this and that reason. And so I think it's similar like with other topics, it's so important to get again into the connection with the farmers themselves. And I'm sure you know this better than me, for example,
yeah,
because you own the farm.
I would say really the farms are in, let's say, the most important places of our movement. And to have the farm gates open is a huge task, but we do it on many places. And there again, I mean, also the wine makers, they are really talented in communications. They sell their wine, and when the wine is biodynamic, they sell biodynamics with the wine. And yeah, myself, I have run a farm for 30 years, which is in connection with a hotel and a restaurant, and many, many people passed. And it's not always easy to be open and to be nice, but in general, we achieved. And when I look back, thousands of people passed throughout these 30 years. Thousands.
Yeah. It's a nice farm. I will also put a link in the show note, also the wine book from Romana. So maybe if some are around, they can join and visit you there. So it's a really nice farm. So we've seen that this biodynamic movement has developed over the different centuries and phases, so to say. Why do you think it's still that relevant? And like, why is it still a concept that can be applied to different times? Like, why can biodynamics be still applied today, although the concept is 100 years nearly old?
Well, I will try to explore a little bit this concept. I would say, on the one hand, it's a very deep going ecological approach, and whatever ecological challenges which occur, in some way we discover that with biodynamics we have a kind of not answering, but yeah, in the same time answering. I mean actually the climate challenge or biodiversity loss and all this. When I look, and I try to be objective, but what brings biodynamics now for the issue of a climate balance of a farm, or let's say to be a place where biodiversity is hosted, I think we have something to bring, or it's still a good answer. I can't see then others have other good answers, but I think we are still in time. The second approach is about food, about nutrition. We need good food, or I would say real food. And either it is cheap or it is expensive. What we need for each one today is real food and not junk food. And I would say we have a concept and we have an experience to create real food. And perhaps a third aspect is for the people working on the farm, because in the overall situation of our global civilization, we have a drain from countryside to cities. More and more people leave the countryside, leave the villages and go to cities. I'm regularly in Egypt, for example, You don't even not know how many people are living in Cairo, because you don't know if it's 30 or 40 millions. It's just huge. And when you go out, less and less people are there, And this is in many, many countries, And it's even a little bit in countries like France, where the countryside is more and more empty and people go to the cities. It's a little bit different perhaps in south of Germany or in Switzerland and so on. But this, and what is the reason, We think it's economical reason. Yes, also. But it's a cultural reason. Because to be a modern personality who can, let's say, live a modern life, this drains you to the cities, even in India. And to be on the countryside, on the village, means to be not free, to be in a collective situation, and to be in a traditional track. And I would say biodynamics brings you the possibility that being on a farm, being a farmer, a farm woman, that you are in a modern situation, because it's based on freedom, it's based on free engagement. And of course, the cows have to be milked each morning. But out of which attitude you do it, this changes. And this I call the cultural impulse of biodynamics. So it's ecological. It's in a way the issue of food, and it's in a way the cultural impulse which makes it worth to be a biodynamic farmer, farm woman, and you don't lose your striving for a modern and based on individual freedom existence.
And why do you think that it's still relevant to look at the history of biodynamics? Like, why do you think it's important to still consider of what are the roots of biodynamics? Because when you say the modern society, then it could also mean to lose one another in this time, so to say. But is it also important to look back?
Yes. In order that you are capable to shape the future, you need to know the past. So we make one step back, actually, in the year 2022, and with the conference in 2023, one step back in order to be more powerful to jump into the future. I see it like this. It's not the goal in itself. It helps that we discover what are the needed steps actually, and what is the challenging and the chances of our actual moment. Yeah.
And what are your personal three reasons to work for that future? Like, or what kind of future would you see then?
Well, I would say it's more and more a worldwide movement. So this, I think, is great. And we are on the way, but we can go further on. We have been coming from Germany and then Europe, and we have overcome to be purely Eurocentric, but we have to make steps. So really to become a worldwide movement, this is one of the things I'm working for. The second one is, I would say, this opening, that we are really open for everyone without losing our identity. Yeah? It's a challenge. But how can we deepen what we have as a biodynamic impulse and being in the same time open? So this is a challenge which is interesting too. And perhaps the third one is this, let's say, polarity between practical work and between research work. Yeah? We do what we do because we are farmers, but in some way we strive also to understand what we do because we are also searching people or researching people. So that the two poles, they come together and they help each the other one. This, I think, is worth to work for also. Perhaps this, the three, points you are asking.
And as you said, there's a lot of things have already developed. I mean, the foundation of the Biodynamic Federation, Demeter International, where the people can now really join worldwide into one network. I will also put a link to this in the show notes. And then also this new agriculture course edition that you just published, which I think is also very interesting, because there you have really made the look into the past, but to see how the things have developed over the time. So thank you very much for this conversation. I really enjoyed it. And as you said, I think it's good to take the look, and I just invite the listeners to checking out our website for the program for the upcoming conference. It's still some time, so it will be in February 2023, but you can still check out the website for further information. And yes, thank you very much, Uli. I think it's not the last time that we have you as an interview guest with us, so thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thanks to all the listeners, and the doors are open. Please enter.
Thank you.